Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This episode is brought to you by Libsyn. Planning to start a podcast? Look no further than Libsyn. Libsyn is one of the biggest feature-rich podcast hosting platforms in the world. Libsyn is IAB certified, offers many hosting plans, and you can start for as low as $5 a month. Aspiring podcasters who listen to the show radio can get 1 month free by using the promo code TSR. Use promo code TSR at checkout to get 1 month free.
Welcome to another episode of The Show Radio. This episode 664. I'm your host, Andrew.
Hey, guys, and I'm Danny.
And this is your source for tech, gaming, and entertainment news. So we have a couple of things in this particular episode. X-Men 97. We're going to talk about that. I finally got a chance to watch it, so Daniela is not going to be mad at me this time, so I think we're good. Red versus Blue stuff, Take Two, acquisition, Marvel rivals, and then we'll go from there. So Daniela, X-Men 97, I did watch it. It was absolutely amazing. I definitely hear your thoughts first, and I'll give mine. Three episodes out now, right now, right?
Yep, three.
So I watched all three. Are they going to add more?
Yeah, they are going to add more. I swear I could have sworn how many I was going to be in this season, but I don't remember. And I'm okay with that because this is one of the few shows that I'm okay waiting weekly for. Usually if it's a weekly release, I'll just wait till they're all out and then I will binge watch it one weekend. But this one for X-Men 97, I look forward to it every single week. It reminds me of my childhood in so many ways where, like, you know, when you're a kid, you don't even care how many episodes there are because, like, either you're either watching it while it comes out or you're watching reruns and you don't really think about, like, oh, how many episodes are in this season? No, you're just really excited that you're watching it, even if it's a fifth or sixth time again. And the fact that, like, even the opening, the music, it hits so good. It doesn't get old at all. Like, I'm not tired of hearing that intro whatsoever and how, like, they show every character. I don't skip the intro. I don't. I watch the whole thing through. And, you know, it's like it has, you know, a little refresher stuff on it, you know, some new stuff. But for the most part, it's kind of like it never really stopped from the original X-Men that we grew up with. So, like, I love it. It's just continuing on. And, oh, man. And then you have some of the, you know, original voice actors who have returned and some new ones. And I don't think I'm disappointed with any of the voice acting at all. And just the way that, like, you can tell that there's some new age or current age, really, like, art to it. But at the same time, it still has that old school feel to it without it being, like, too janky. Because, you know, when you go back and you say, like, The Simpsons that's been on my entire life, you go back to, like, maybe season five, even season one, you're like, man, that looks rough. First of all, the original X-Men, which you can still watch that on Disney Plus, still looks amazing. And then you have X-Men 97 that looks just as good. I'm just so happy. But I feel like I don't know if I felt like this way before as a kid, but I feel like some of the episodes go really fast in kind of,
I agree,
like, presenting something. Here's a conflict and here's a resolve. Here's a problem. Here's the solution and resolved. I'm like, was it always that fast?
Yeah, I think I need to watch the original one to see if the scenes and the setup, you know, took place and the transitions, you know, were that quick. But fantastic art. So I echo a lot of the things that you shared, and it's just story, voice acting, you know, all of it is absolutely incredible. I really enjoyed everything that I watched with X-Men 97. And after I watched the third episode, what it did is it connected, you know, the watch next to the original X-Men animation that we used to watch back in the 90s. And that's still good. You know, I definitely agree with you that that's still good. So I'm going to watch that. But I like how they introduce the characters in X-Men 97. If you aren't necessarily familiar with what they did by way of, you know, their superpowers and things of that nature, I really like how they introduce every single character and the depth that we get even within the first two episodes, you know, of watching it. You know, I think it's, you know, amazingly done. So nothing bad there. I did skip, you know, some intros because I got hooked and I'm like, okay, I know what happened. I watched the recap though. I skipped the intro because I'm like, okay, yes, I love the intro. The intro is great. I watched the recap. Let's just get right into the episode. And I just enjoyed all the episodes that they currently have out. They have three out right now at the time of this recording. So we're recording on the 2nd of April. April 1st, I kind of wish we could fast forward that day so all these April Fool's jokes can just go away. But sidebar there. But X-Men 97 is absolutely amazing. Any additional thoughts there?
I will say on episode 3, I feel like the introduction of Madeline Pryor felt so quick and rushed. Like they got her in and they got her out. I don't know if that's the last time we're going to see her, but if you like, I will not call myself a huge X-Men comic book buff on it, but there's things that I remember about Madeline Pryor that they did kind of change around a little bit. Even just like having their son, Nathan Summers, there, the introduction and how he got sent off like almost instantaneously to the future there with Bishop. I feel like I kind of wanted a little bit more in that storyline there, like
to 100%.
Expand more. Like that's something I really wanted because I feel like that storyline for just that, I feel like could have been like 2 or 3 episodes, but no, they got it done in like less than like what, 25 minutes or so. But other than that's like the main reason why I feel like that seems really fast considering from the comic book version or even from like the earlier seasons of X-Men. That is something I would want more of. Maybe.
Yeah. It definitely feels condensed, and I'm going to say that potentially it's because of the 20-minute window, right? Because the episodes are 20 minutes, you know, a piece or whatever. So they kind of rushed the story. I do agree with you that episode 3 felt kind of rushed in introducing, you know, some of the characters, and I didn't even remember that Jean had a clone. Right. So I had to like refresh my memory. And I do agree with you. We're not like, you know, super, you know, experts when it comes to the Marvel, you know, canon and all the single characters that exist in the universe. But I didn't even recall that. I remember every other character except for, you know, the clone. And I thought that was interesting. But aside from that, fantastic. If you have not watched it yet, definitely check out X-Men 97. Any other thoughts there?
Feel like I could go in about Madeline Pryor, but I won't.
Yeah, go ahead. There. Okay, so go ahead. So give us a little bit and then we'll transition. Okay.
So originally what it is with Madeline Pryor was that after, you know, Jean goes through her Dark Phoenix phase there and dies, Sinister actually created a clone of what we get is Madeline Pryor. And Madeline doesn't actually get awakened until the original Jean like dies. So Scott, he gets really super sad, really super bummed. And then he goes to Alaska where he meets Madeline Pryor. And she has no recollection. She does not know who Jean is or anything like that. And they ended up bonding because she looks so much, because she pretty much is, like his dead wife, Jean. And then they get together and they have a family, but he finds out that Jean is actually still alive, goes back to the X-Men, and then he gets back with the original Gene and gets really happy and he's like, oh, I love you. So he leaves his baby mom over there with their son, Nathan, who Sinister actually did clone. So that's part that that is correct about the cartoon, about episode 3, so that he could get Nathan, which is their son, because right. He wants to do experiments. He wants his abilities and he thinks he's his ultimate everything like this. After Sinister takes their child, Madeline goes to Scott to try to, you know, figure this out, wondering what's happening, also to get her son back, just to find out that the person that she doesn't even like, this Jean Grey over here, is like, they find out they're clones and they're like, oh my God, what? I like you. Like, you take my husband, you ruin my family, I don't like you, and what? I'm a clone of you? Like, I can't get away, which causes her to go crazy. And then she turns into, you know, the Goblin Queen over there and just like, turns all this stuff, and then eventually things get handled and she ends up, I believe she ends up like offing, undeading herself or unalive.
That's crazy.
And Gene, the original Gene, and Scott take Nathan, adopt him. Then Gene turns into his stepmom, but then not really his stepmom, but it's not the person that birthed him, even though their mom is essentially the same person. And they, you know, he kind of grows up with them, but in the process of when Sinister does get his hand on him, obviously Nathan's actually a little bit older. He actually gets those little nanoviruses on them, and to save his life, they sent him into the future with somebody who came back from the future and says, like, hey, we can help you out. And then, you know, as we all know,
was it still Bishop?
To be, no, it's not Bishop.
Okay.
I forget her name, but she's actually like sacrificed her body to be this energy thing to come back and says that, hey, you know, your son ends up being a hero in our time. We have what can like help him and everything. That takes him back into the future. And he grows up as Nathan Day. Oh, I forgot his name. Day something. He did not take the name Summers, but I cannot remember the name right now. And yeah, he grows up over there in the future, which we all grow when we know him to be as Cable. And
Cable, one of my favorite characters. Yeah.
He goes back and forth there to do a whole lot of stuff. And then, you know, you get the X-Force and everything like that. So that is a whole storyline there, which I would have really liked.
Yeah, no, that's dope. That's dope. Any other tidbits you want to add before we transition to the next thing?
No.
Yeah, because it sounds like you could go on about it, which is really dope.
I can give a little bit of history of this, but this next topic, I need you to give some history about this, because I'm just kind of learning about this and I find it very interesting based on the replies to said tweet.
Okay, so let's go with the next thing. So the next thing that we have here is should Tekken 8 fans get a Waffle House level? Okay, so what was interesting is I started seeing, you know, people talk about Waffle House and Tekken, and someone did a mock-up of a Waffle House restaurant, what it would look like in the Tekken world, right? So I was looking into that. I said, hey, you know, that would be really cool. And even the producer, Harada for Tekken, really started talking about it as well, you know, asking for the explanation of what this would mean, you know, if the actual stage, you know, got into the Tekken 8 game. And one of the things that he said is, thanks for the explanation, and I understand that many people are requesting it. However, I think you are missing one important point. The restaurant has both the trademark and the rights to the restaurant. So if the restaurant chain headquarters refuses to accept, you know, that, then there won't be a way to actually do it. So I said, hey, Waffle House, consider the amount of marketing you'll get if you do this, you know, from the gamers and FGC events like, you know, Evo, you know, the world's largest fighting game tournament, and YouTube channels co-streaming these tournaments, because that's like a product placement, easy promo. If the Waffle House restaurant was on a big stage and everyone's watching these matches, and if they have Waffle Houses near them, you know, mostly in the South, they'll want to go get Waffle House. That's just what happens. You see a can of a particular product, you're like, hey, you know, for some reason, I don't know why it's been a while since I had this thing. I want to go get this milkshake. I want to get this burger. I want to go get this pizza. That's just the way it works. So on a big stage, if Waffle House were to do this, you know, for Tekken, one of the greatest games that we've ever gotten, you know, by way of, you know, a fighting game, I think that would be absolutely incredible. So that's kind of like the background of how that came about. And but, I would love to see that.
But why Waffle House?
Because a Waffle House, a great question, because Waffle House has a history of having some fights in that particular environment. And I could see why they would not want to use, you know, the FGC as a promotion base, you know, for their restaurants, because they're known for good food. You know, if you want to snack and get something that is good, but yet timely, and they're usually open very late, Waffle House has always been a place to go there. And it's not a promo for them. We're not getting paid by Waffle House. We're not affiliates of theirs. This is just a news topic that we have here. And I love their food. The patty melt is usually my favorites, you know, and the hash browns covered, smothered, chunked, you know, for those who are like, what is that? You just have to go to Waffle House to just order that. You'll see all this stuff just happen to show up on your hash browns and stuff like that. So I think that that is part of the concern. If they did not do it because of the reputation of fights that have, you know, happen in the Waffle House restaurant. Aside from that, great food, and this would be a dope collaboration crossover if they actually did it.
Is it only in the South? I've never
mostly seen
a Waffle House. I've never been to a Waffle House, and I don't know anything about it. I just know that there's a restaurant called Waffle House. I knew that before that. I just don't know anybody who's eaten that one.
Yeah, it is good. I mean, the food is good. They make it there. It's made to order. Okay. I love their patty melts. Their sandwiches are good. Their eggs are good. So it's kind of like a breakfast / lunch type of food. Their waffles are amazing, in my opinion. And it's mostly in the South. And according to their Twitter, they've been serving good food fast since 1955. Again, we're not connected with them. We're not affiliated with them. It's a spot that I've enjoyed eating when I used to live in the South. So there's that.
So what I find so interesting is when Harada asked for the explanation about why Waffle House, I needed to know that too. And so of course I had to go diving into like the tweet replies, and I found so interesting. That's why I kind of wanted to know, like, are there really that many fights? Because you have one, which comes from Nikki, who I follow, Real HK Smash, who says, this is where we Americans hold our version of the King of the Iron Fist tournament. Like, and somebody else said, Waffle House is where Americans fight. And I'm like, okay, you can tell me the food is all that great, but if you're telling me that this is a popular spot,
right,
to just, like, get into fights, I would never go.
Yeah. So to be fair, right, every time I've gone there, I've never seen any fights. So I guess it's based on maybe area or
are they,
I don't
like
know,
open late at night? Like, are they, yeah, one of those restaurants that stay open pretty late?
Yeah. I think, okay, most of them might be like 24 hours. But yeah, they do open pretty late. So, and that's,
okay,
the other thing too.
Understand.
Right. People just pull up at any time of the night, you know, they're craving, you know, a burger or eggs or whatever. They just, you know, pop in a Waffle House. You know, if you're traveling or, you know, you're doing a road trip, and you're probably going to see one if you're heading down south at some point. You know, you could just pull it up on a map, go there. Most of the time they should be open. I don't ever recall seeing one closed. So there's
that. Okay. Okay, then. I guess I can understand that with that mentality. But at the same time, so the original question is, should Tekken 8 fans get a Waffle House level? I don't know how widely known or that fact is. I mean, I don't qualify myself to speak for everybody, but I don't know. I feel like maybe a McDonald's level would make more sense, because that's more widely known. Yes, that's great marketing for Waffle House themselves and great possibilities. But I feel like it has to be something that everybody can kind of understand and get the lore behind it, a reason why. I mean, I can only imagine if you're in Japan and you're playing, you're like,
What is the thing, right?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you might even Google, right? So like one of the things that you said is you went to dig a little deeper into why, out of all the places that people can eat, why would this be the choice, right? To have a particular restaurant and a Tekken stage. And it makes sense, but by way of reputation, it may not, if they're trying to keep a certain reputation for themselves. So I can see why they would say, you know, hey, you know, it's not something that we would consider. And I don't even think that they've responded yet either. So there's that. But, you know, we'll see. I'll keep a tab on it and see if they actually respond to that. But I think it would be good if they did it. And the other thing I was thinking about as well is Burger Town. Burger Town was a famous section on a particular map for Modern Warfare. Oh, man. It's either 2 or 3 for Burger Town. You go up the escalator and Burger Town will be directly in front of you, I would say maybe 11, 12 o'clock, right? Once you get out of the escalator. On the left side of that particular stage, there's a corridor with glass on both sides. But as soon as you come up the elevator, the plane is outside. Then you have straight ahead about 11 o'clock, just a little bit off to the side, straight ahead is Burger Town. So Burger Town was a big thing in Modern Warfare. And that kind of placement for callouts has always been a good thing. You know, when it comes to stages, you know, that are, you know, multiplayer PvP type of things. So I don't know. I'm curious to see if they actually, you know, say anything about it, but branding, it may not be good. So I'm definitely aware of that as well. Any other thoughts here?
I could totally see them probably saying no, but then also at the same time, maybe jumping onto the meme of it and riding that wave. But yeah, for not sure. Like committing to it.
Yeah. And it will definitely bring awareness to just the fact that we're tweeting about them in this particular way. It was definitely raising awareness to not just a Waffle House, but, you know, they're getting impressions on that because people are talking about them. And, you know, maybe if anyone is traveling, they may just say, hey, you know, I've been hearing all this stuff about this Waffle House and we're down here, wherever down here is. And I know there's one not too far away. Let's go check it out. Let's see what the hype is about. And you may even get some sales, you know, from that.
Possibly. It probably would be good for them to ride that little wave for a little bit, but I can totally get why they just don't jump on board.
100%. Next thing that we have, do you remember the Ugly Sonic? Remember Ugly Film Sonic?
Who doesn't remember that?
Right. So even with this particular bullet point, right? So Ugly Film Sonic and how Hollywood makes video game movies. So Ugly Film Sonic, we saw it. We were like, what is this? This is not what Sonic looks like. And they had to make the adjustments. And it's probably the best adjustment that they had to do for a major character, right? And it actually set the standard, you know, for how the game movie adaptations are taking place today. So what's your thoughts on that? And even some of the adaptations that are probably coming up and even the ones that we've recently seen, you know, by way of Mario.
I think that was the one time where maybe our internet bullying was productive. I don't fully agree with it because bullying isn't nice in general, but then it got things done and we caught a film that we really, really liked. But here's the other thing about that. How much different would Street Fighter have been or Dragon Ball? Well, even though that's not a video game, that's an anime. The live actions of that would have been if we saw the trailer and then collectively, like, what are you doing?
Right.
Why? Like, would they have come out? Would they have made the changes? We don't know, but we wouldn't have gotten that terrible Chun-Li movie or that very questionable Dragon's Bomb movie.
I still like the Chun-Li movie. I'm not going to lie.
I don't know. Like, there's a certain level where I'm okay with some level of, like, cheesiness. Like, I don't touch the original Street Fighter movies. I don't know. There was something about it that I really, really like, even though it was really cheesy, kind of campy. Even with Mortal Kombat, like, that one was still pretty good to a certain degree. But even then, like, I think what I have attached, the emotions that I have attached to those movies was that I was a kid when I came out with those. And I was just stoked to see a live action Street Fighter. I was stoked to see a live action Mortal Kombat. However, if you had that same content, those things didn't exist in my childhood, and you came out with that now, I might be mad.
right.
But I like the Mortal Kombat. I can't remember how it came out a few years ago. I like that recent iteration of Mortal Kombat. I thought that was pretty good. I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah, it was really good. With Sub-Zero and Scorpion in the beginning, and, you know, the assassination, all that stuff. And yeah, that one was pretty dope.
So the introduction of that one was really good. But now you have, you know, we grew up. These things mean a lot to us. Like, as much as you want to claim to be, you know, super adult, really responsible, don't get rid of childish things, there's a child that still loves, that lives in you and loves these things still, that has an emotional attachment to it. And you don't want to see that ruined. You don't want some, like, barely trying movie, which kind of what Sonic was. And then you have, you know, you finally have studios that are finally getting smart and are like, hey, we want to make an adaptation of this one. We should get the studio involved, which brought us The Last of Us, which I don't think I've met anybody who has been disappointed by The Last of Us series, like, at all. Like, there's some choices in there that kind of, like, we kind of filled in, like, we personally, as we play through it, fill in the blanks, which the TV series kind of, like, further expands upon. But for the most part, it's sticking to the source. And 100%. You have both the TV or movie studio and the gaming studio working together to create this live action, which I think that is the magical formula that, you know, future adaptations need to stick with. So you have Fallout series that is coming out that I really hope that, you know, they're really, really taking the lead there and just kind of listening to what, you know, they've done for The Last of Us. And they really stick to it, because I think that really is a huge make or break for a lot of things. And I can't even just say that's only for video game adaptations, even for books. Like, there are certain things in the books where I feel like, okay, I can understand why you made these changes and I let it go. And then there's other things in books where, like, why? Why did you do that? Why did you remove this? Why did you change this? Why does this character do this now? And that I don't understand the decision behind. So I think as consumers, as watchers, as people who enjoy this and take this content in, there's a certain level that we do feel entitled to be able to speak our minds and hopefully make those changes. How we do that is very, very questionable sometimes. I do not agree with, you know, death threats and stalking and all of this other stuff. No, that is not the way. Like, use your voice, but in a positive manner, to be able to make these changes, because I assure you that there's a lot of other fans that most likely do feel that same way, but they're not going to the level of, like, let me send you some death threats.
Right. We don't want those.
No, we don't want those.
No, that's good stuff. Yeah. So Ugly Sonic, you know, gave us, you know, some of the greatest video game adaptation movies ever, right? Mario, legendary, right? And we're looking forward to seeing more. Borderlands movie adaptation. What'd you think of that? Any thoughts on that? Did you see anything on that? Yeah.
Seen the trailers. I would like to watch it. There's only one thing that I'm that I'm not going to judge the movie on right now is the casting of Cate Blanchett and oh my goodness, why did I forget her name? She's from Halloween. She's playing Tannis. Either way, okay, I love both actresses. I really do. Her name is escaping me. I don't know why every episode I always forget the name of somebody.
All right, we can look it up. It's
but
no
either
problem.
Way, they're a bit older than the original characters. I think they look fantastic, though. So I'm not going to super. I'm not judging that part at all. But like Lilith, I feel is like, I don't know.
Is it too early to tell, though?
It is too early to tell. It really is. So I'm not trying to prejudge it right now. I am looking forward to it. I think they have an amazing cast. Just that I don't know if I would have went for an older version of both of those characters. I'm assuming they're going to be older versions of those characters, but we shall see. And I am looking forward to it. And I can't wait to play it, but I will also say, since you brought it up, Super Mario Brothers, the right. live action with John Leguizamo, that was terrible.
Right. It was what it was. What are you going to do?
I don't know, but I feel like they need, like, if they're going to do a live action of that again, like, you did those Goombas dirty. Like,
yeah. What can you do? But the animation for Mario. Oh my gosh, absolutely fantastic! Yeah. So thank God for Ugly Film Sonic. And one of the things that they mentioned in this particular article is that they said that down to the very last second before the movie makes it anywhere that we actually see it, they're making changes, and that only took place because of Ugly Film Sonic. So thank you, Ugly Film Sonic, for your contribution to things that we enjoy today. Next thing that we have, although
wait, one more thing, because we're super behind on it, and I don't think you and I have been watching it. The one that I have to say that is the most recent that has very questionable decision making for is Halo.
Yeah, we got to catch up.
That way, because haven't watched any of season two. At least I haven't.
Not yet. Season Me two, neither.
Super terrible.
I would tell you if I one, was. Yeah.
Even with season one, I see there's a great divide on a lot of things, and those decisions that a lot of people are wondering why. And I believe we both argue the case about, like, you know, me coming from somebody who does not know anything about Master Chief's background or Halo lore or anything like that, really enjoying it, versus, you know, somebody who has a history, who knows the Halo background, your take on it, basically, about these choices. So,
yeah, Halo's interesting because, no, go ahead.
Yeah, because I feel with that one, because I'm not, I didn't, you know, grow up being a fan or knowing much about it, like, a lot of the decisions don't bother me as much. But I can see, whereas your fan of the video games, of the books, kind of like wondering, why did you make those choices? I can understand from, I guess, this studio side of it, the TV movie studio side of it, making certain choices and getting it.
Right.
But to what level do you stick with it if someone like me, who doesn't know anything about the whole lore, enjoys it? And I think that's where some questionable decisions comes on for other adaptations that drives me crazy, drives other people crazy, that I'm probably seeing the other side of it for, like, Halo.
Right, 100%. Yeah, it's definitely, my thing is, like, I try to give it a little bit more grace, because although they tried to tell you the story about the kidnappings and augmentations and replacing the kids with clones and then the clones dying. And then they really believe that the clones are the actual people and all that stuff. Halo is absolutely fantastic. We did enjoy, you know, the first season, you know, removing of the pill. I know we talked about that. You know, did they need to do that? Why did they do that? Seeing Master Chief's face, is that common, not common? You know, why do we need to see his face? You know, everyone's Master Chief, keep the mask on, all that. So yeah, we definitely need to check in season two, see what they're doing and what they're talking about.
Okay. And that's where I leave that.
That's where you leave that. Fair enough. Red versus Blue, movie release date and trailer. I believe that's May. And this is the very last Red versus Blue thing that we're going to get. And I believe that's going to be a digital release for that. I've really enjoyed that particular series. I know we've talked about, you know, Rooster Teeth and all the amazing contributions that we've seen from them. You know, comic relief and all the stories and the podcasts and all the stuff that they've done over the years. I'm sure all that talent will find other places or start their own. So I think it's going to be great to see what they do individually and collectively, you know, as, you know, things are being rerouted, resources are being rerouted for Rooster Teeth. But watch the trailer. What did you think of the trailer?
You know, let me go back a thing with this one. It is a very beautiful thing that it's sad. It's sad that Rooster Teeth is going away and, you know, that's, we're not going to get anymore. But I think it's also very beautiful that the first thing that we ever got from Rooster Teeth was Red versus Blue. And the last thing that we will get from them is Red versus Blue. But of anything that's Halo, even though it has nothing to really do with it, really, I always found it funny. Like, I really, since I couldn't play the game, I used to like love watching the little skits and stories and everything that they did. And I was all like, that is really cool that you just do this. And then they just built whole careers and entertainment and stories off of that. So to see, you know, this last movie, essentially, I think it was very nice. I thought it was like, it just, Jeff's Kiss, the perfect way to go out to bring this. But at the same time, it's called Restoration. Are we supposed to take away something more from that title?
Right. We'll see. We'll see. We've seen a lot of these, you know, groups and teams, you know, disband and, you know, reconnect in other projects. So you never know. You never know. It's just one of those things that we'll see. You know, we'll keep tabs on that, you know, for sure, by way of news and updates. And we have like two more things and then we're out of here. So Take-Two to acquire Borderlands developer Gearbox. The publisher is paying $460 million for the acquisition. Any thoughts there?
Weren't they just like not too long ago acquired by somebody else and then they're being sold to Take-Two for less than they were actually bought for? Like,
I can't keep count. I don't know.
I can't keep track. After a while, I can't keep track about where you were. If you were by yourself, if you're like a studio on your own, then acquired by somebody else and you're sold to someone else. Like, at some point I start to lose track. Do I think that's cool? Great. Stoked that Take-Two got them for cheaper than they were sold for previously, which I think was like $1 billion or something like that. You know, Gearbox is awesome studio anyway. So obviously we talked about Borderlands. They came up with Borderlands, which is one of my favorite games. And Take-Two has
Which Borderlands?
The first one. The first one is always gonna be my favorite.
Really?
Always gonna be my favorite.
Okay, interesting. I like the second one.
I like the first one. Like, the first one was like a lot of fun and it's one of the very, very few first person shooters that I can actually play. That is specifically why I was so stoked, because I very, very much remember. I don't know why this is such a key memory to me, but I remember just sitting in my house. I think I was like really bored. I didn't have any friends. I had no friends to play with online. Like all my friends that I played with locally, like they were off playing COD. I didn't have anybody to play with. And it was the first time ever I went to Twitter and asked if anybody wants to play games. And I remember just responding to people and asking them what they had. And at that time, Borderlands has been out for a while. So they already had a Game of the Year edition that had everything. And everybody just was like, oh, you have Borderlands? I was like, I don't. They're like, oh, it was something really cheap too. And I think at that time, it was like $20 or $30 to get the Game of the Year edition. And it had like all of the expansion DLCs and everything. So I was like, you know what? All right. Went to my GameStop, bought it. And I was like, these people who said that they would play, I'm like, look, let me just try it out. Let me see if I can even play it. And I was so stoked that I could, and I didn't get sick. I didn't get nauseous. Nothing, absolutely nothing. I was stoked. And like, I went on like a binge for months just playing that with like everybody. And I thought, to me, that was the first time I actually really like purposely played with people online that I didn't know. And that was on the 360. So the Borderlands 1 has a very core memory. Like that is my favorite. That is like what I attach that to, because it just is. It's just always going to be. I like 2. 3 was okay. But 1.
3 was whatever. Okay. That's what it was for me. So hopefully they do something, because they're thinking about making the next one. And hopefully the next one is a combination of the first game and the second game, because the third game to me was a throwaway. Maybe they could say the third game was a dream and then just remake the first and second one and use the things that we loved about the first two and make it into the fourth title. Right. So, so that's what's up with that. So, hero shooters, Daniela, we've been spending quite a few minutes the last couple of weeks talking about hero shooters that are doing great, hero shooters that are not doing so great, and what they could make adjustments to be better. But now we have an introduction of a new hero shooter, Marvel Rivals. Okay, setting a stage, you know, announcement. Excitement. Marvel says, hey, there's something missing on the market, and we're going to come out with our own title. This is a free-to-play Marvel Rivals hero shooter. Any thoughts on that?
Well, as much as I really don't like it when people compare certain games to other games because it's similar and all that other stuff, I'm not going to lie. I sat there and I did the same exact thing. I was like, this looks like Overwatch with a Marvel skin on top of it. But at the same time, it looks a little bit more polished. It was the stages that they were showing that looked so much like Overwatch stages that I couldn't get past that. And it wasn't even just the heroes, because in this heroes, you're in Marvel Rivals, it is third person. So you actually see your character and, you know, all the action, which I think is pretty cool. But it really was just the stages. It was like, you take that from Overwatch? Why does it look? Except that, like, it has very, the environment is very, very interactive, at least from what I can tell from the trailer itself. But
would you play it? You're gonna play it?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Why not? Why not? Why don't you know?
You know what I think is great is that all of these games that are like this, I always call hero shooters or something like that, where this is literally hero shooters there, which is pretty cool. I don't know if they're for me anymore.
Okay.
Like, for me, call me lazy, call me whatever you want to call me, but I'm at an age where I don't want to think so hard about how to best utilize my character. And what characters better combats or is like opposing to another character. I don't care. Call me lazy all you want, but I am not in the form of wanting to strategize. Like, I just want to get in and just turn my brain off and just play, just go into autopilot, enjoy, kick back and relax. That is where I'm at in my get off my digital lawn life.
I know.
But it does look really cool. And there's like some comments for this trailer that I couldn't help but laugh. One person says that I would like to imagine our screen being black when we play as Daredevil. I don't know if that's a character there, but I'm like, oh, you do fall in Marvel.
That would be cool. Yeah. That would be cool.
But it does look a little bit more polished. I don't know. Like, I can say that I'm probably not going to play it, but how well it's going to be received, the popularity, the concurrent players. I don't even know what that stage is like right now, because I can tell you right now, like, my son, he is like all into Valorant. And he loves the character he plays, and he goes in on it, and he plays with his friends almost every night. He shows me videos of like how to best utilize his character, and I love my son. I just don't care.
Yeah, the Valorant world, I never got into. Never got into that world.
But there's just certain games, shooters, PvP shooters, those team type games where people are kind of just hooked on it. So if you're coming in with something, you got to come with something unique. And Marvel Rivals might have that simply because they're Marvel characters. I honestly think as a PvP shooter, this may do better than the fighter that they have coming out.
Interesting.
Simply because the way that this is being played on all the abilities and moves that we know these characters to have, it just feels so much more entertaining, more interactive.
Yeah,
like you're actively in a fighter. Yeah, it's like a 1v1 there, and you have certain mechanics that you just but to match do that. Whereas in a PvP shooter, this team-based thing, you're having to best utilize and strategize how to move about. And a lot of people really like that. Not me, but I know a lot of people do. And just having that extra oomph to best utilize Spider-Man, Hulk, Groot, like, I feel that's a lot more entertaining and a lot more value as far as utilizing, you know, Marvel characters than a fighter.
Yeah, so when I saw the trailer, I was like, you know, there it is. You know, Marvel wants to fill the gap that is missing in the hero shooter landscape. When I think of hero shooters, there's only a few. Or there's another one that they were going to do that it was an epic title that went away that might be coming back. I don't remember what the name of that game was. But you have Paladins, you have Overwatch, and now you have Marvel Rivals. I don't know any other hero shooters. Do you have any other names that come to mind when it comes to that? And there's one that I think they're remaking, and it was an epic one. It started with a P as well, I think.
I don't remember, but Valorant is the only one that comes to my mind.
Yeah, so my thing is, because we're seeing this Marvel Rivals, there's research and development that goes into, you know, this stuff to say, hey, you know, we need to put out another title that is going to fit not only our brand, but is going to fit a need that is missing, you know, in the landscape. So like when I think about all the fighting games that we have now, I mean, I can't even name all of them, but we of course named Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, you know, Fate of Fury, Art of Fighting, Guru, Mark of the Wolves, you know, Dragon Ball Z, and we go down the list of all these titles, and they meet a need in the genre that, you know, they're providing, you know, the need for. And I think that Marvel Rivals is going to do that. you know, for the characters that we love and we've enjoyed over the years, you know, through comics and even movies. And now we're going to be able to play them in a hero shooter. So I think that it is going to meet a need. And I think it's going to be in a category of its own because of what you shared, the fact that it's Marvel. And, you know, Marvel's going to do what Marvel does. I don't think it's going to overshadow Paladins, because I think Paladins is in its own world. But this, to me, is a direct competitor to Overwatch, in my opinion. It's direct. Yeah, it's direct. And it looks really good. I do agree when you said that the polish is definitely there. And we'll have to see how, you know, the market responds, right? It's one thing to say, hey, we know you have concurrence all the time. You know, Paladin concurrence, some people say 5K. When I actually looked at the numbers, it's under 5K. It's like 3,700 individuals who were at the time when we looked at it, maybe a week ago, concurrently playing, you know, Paladins, 3,700, which is not a lot of people, right? Sounds like a lot, mm-hmm. but it's not a lot. Versus Overwatch, which probably be three times that, four times that. If you want to be fair, I don't know now, especially with the cloud that hangs over it, it could be maybe double that. It could be 6,000, it could be 10, right? Versus, you know, the surge that we may get, you know, once we start seeing what Marvel Rivals will do. It may get 10K out of the gate, surprisingly, because people are upset on what's happening with Overwatch because they recently scrapped something with Overwatch, right? That we recently saw in the news. So what is it going to be when it comes to, you know, esports? You know, who's going to be, you know, picking up the Marvel Rivals for the esports, you know, circuit? We'll see. But I think it's going to be something that people are going to enjoy once they release.
Well, you can definitely sign up for the closed alpha test that comes in May.
Yeah. Definitely going to do that for sure. Because I really want to see what it's like, because, you know, I have no desire to play Overwatch right now. And maybe it's unfair to Overwatch that we feel like we're dogging it the last couple of weeks, but people are disappointed with where Overwatch is, and I think that's fair.
Yeah, considering their long history that they had, the popularity and the success that they found with Overwatch 1, that Overwatch 2 is just not meeting that standard.
Yeah, 100%. Any final thoughts and we'll get out of here?
No, if we're not having too many topics this time, we sure do know how to really elaborate.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely dope episode. This episode 664. Daniela, where can they find you?
You can find me on all the socials at MissDJM. And Andrew, where can they find you?
You can find me here on YouTube, and you can find me at Uriah, U-R-I-Y-Y-A, on Twitter and Instagram. And thanks for watching and listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.